even know them, Nick snapped. He put his arm on Rachel's shoulder and declared, let's get out of here. You've met her family? Eleanor called after him. Nick turned back with a scowl. Yes, I've met Rachel's mother many times, and I went to Thanksgiving at her uncle's in California, where I got to know many of her relatives. Even her father? Eleanor asked, raising one eyebrow. Rachel's father died a long time ago. You already know that, Nick said impatiently. Well, that's a very convenient story, isn't it? But I assure you, he's very much alive, Eleanor shot back. What? Rachel said, confused. Rachel, you can stop pretending, la. I know all about your father. What? Ayaw, look at her act, Eleanor twisted her face mockingly. You know as well as I do that your father is still alive. Rachel looked at Eleanor as if she was talking to a deranged woman. My father died in a horrible industrial accident when I was 2 months old. That's why my mother brought me to America. Eleanor studied the girl for a moment, trying to discern whether she was giving the performance of a lifetime or speaking the truth. Well, I'm sorry to be the one to break the news to you, Rachel. Your father did not die. He is in a prison outside Shenzhen. I met him myself a few weeks ago. The man was rotting away behind rusty bars, but he still had the nerve to demand an enormous dowry in exchange for you. Eleanor took out a faded manila envelope, the same envelope she had been given by the investigator in Shenzhen. She placed three pieces of paper on the coffee table. One was a copy of Rachel's original birth certificate. The next was a 1992 press clipping about the jailing of a man named Zhu Fangmin after he had ordered illegal cost-cutting measures that led to a construction accident that killed 74 workers in Shenzhen. Huopeng condo tragedy update. Monster jailed at last, the headline screamed. The third was a notice of a reward from the Zhu family for the safe return of a baby named Zhu Anmei, who had been kidnapped by her mother, Carrie Ching, in 1981. Nick and Rachel took a few steps toward the table and stared at the papers in astonishment. What the hell did you do, Mum? You had Rachel's family investigated? Nick kicked over the coffee table. Nick's grandmother shook her head as she sipped her tea. Imagine wanting to marry a girl from such a family. So disgraceful. Really, Nicky, what would Gong Gong say if he was alive? Madre, this tea needs a little more sugar. Nick was livid. Ama, it's taken me about 20 years, but I finally understand why Dad moved to Sydney. He can't stand being around you. Siyi put down her teacup, stunned by what her favorite grandson had just said. Rachel grabbed at Nick's wrist urgently. He would never forget the look of devastation on her face. I think... need air, she muttered, before collapsing into the wicker tea cart. Chapter 14, 64 Pak Tin Street, Hong Kong. The apartment was not the love nest Astrid had imagined. The living room was tiny with a green vinyl sofa, three wooden dining room chairs, and bright blue plastic buckets full of toys taking up one side of the room. Only the muffled sounds of a neighbor practicing Ballade Pour Adeline on the electric keyboard filled the silence. Astrid stood in the middle of the cramped space, wondering how her life had come to this. How did it get to the point where her husband had resorted to fleeing to this sad romper room? I can't believe you got your dad's men to truck me down, Michael muttered contemptuously, sitting down on the sofa and stretching his arms out along its back. My father had nothing to do with this. Can't you give me a little credit for having my own resources? Astrid said. Great. You win, Michael said. So this is where you've been coming. Is this where your mistress lives? Astrid finally ventured to ask. Yes, Michael said flatly. Astrid was silent for a while. She picked up a little stuffed elephant from one of the buckets and gave it a squeeze. The elephant made a muffled electronic roar. And these are your son's toys? Michael hesitated for a moment. Yes, he finally answered. Bastard! Astrid screamed, throwing the elephant at him with all her might. The elephant bounced off his chest and Astrid sank to the floor, trembling as her body was racked with violent sobs.
I don't care who you fuck, but how could you do this to our son?
She sputtered through her tears. Michael leaned forward, burying his head in his hands. He couldn't stand seeing her like this. As badly as he wanted out of the marriage, he couldn't take hurting her anymore. Things had spiraled out of control, and it was time to come clean. He got up from the sofa and crouched down beside her.
"Listen to me, Astrid,"
he began, placing an arm on her shoulder. Astrid jerked backward and pushed his arm away.
"Listen to me. The boy isn't my son, Astrid."
Astrid looked up at him, not quite registering what he meant. Michael looked Astrid directly in the eyes and said,
"That's not my son, and there is no mistress."
Astrid's brow furrowed.
"What do you mean? I know there was a woman here. I even recognize her." "You recognize her because she's my cousin, Jasmine Ying. Her mother is my auntie, and the little boy is her son."
"So who have you been having an affair with?" Astrid asked, more confused than ever.
"Don't you get it? It's all been an act, Astrid. The text messages, the presents, everything. It's all fake."
"Fake?" Astrid whispered in shock.
"Yes. I faked everything. Well, except the dinner at Petrus. I took Jasmine as a treat. Her husband has been working in Dubai, and she's had a hard time managing on her own."
"I can't believe this," Astrid said, her voice trailing off in astonishment.
"I'm sorry, Astrid. It was a stupid idea, but I didn't think I had any other choice."
"Any other choice? What do you mean?"
"I thought it would be far better for you to want to leave me than for me to divorce you. I would rather be labeled the cheating bastard with an illegitimate son so that you could, your family, could save face," Michael said rather dejectedly.
Astrid stared at him incredulously. For a few minutes, she sat completely still as her mind sifted through everything that had happened in the past few months. Then she spoke.
"I thought I was going insane. I wanted to believe you were having an affair, but my heart kept telling me that you would never do such a thing to me. That just wasn't the man I married. I was so confused, so conflicted, and that's really what made it so painful. An affair or a mistress I could deal with, but something else didn't seem right. Something kept gnawing away at me. It's finally beginning to make sense now."
"I never wanted this to happen," Michael said softly.
"Then why? What did I ever do to make you this miserable? What made you go to all the trouble to fake an entire affair?"
Michael sighed deeply. He got up off the floor and perched on one of the wooden chairs.
"It's just never worked, Astrid. Our marriage. It hasn't worked from day one. We had a great time dating, but we should never have married. We were wrong for each other, but we both got so swept up in the moment. In, let's face it, the sex. That before I realized what was happening, we were standing in front of your pastor. I thought, what the hell? This is the most beautiful girl I've ever met. I'll never be this lucky again." "But then reality hit, and things got to be too much. It just got worse, year after year, and I tried. I really tried, Astrid. But I can't face it anymore. You don't have a clue what it's like being married to Astrid Leong. Not you, Astrid, but everyone's idea of you. I could never live up to it."
"What do you mean? You have lived up to it," Astrid began.
"Everyone in Singapore thinks I married you for your money, Astrid."
"You're wrong, Michael."
"No, you just don't see it. But I can't face another dinner at Nassim Road or Tyersall Park with some minister of finance, some genius artist I don't get, or some tycoon who has a whole bloody museum named after him, feeling like I'm just a piece of meat. To them, I'm always Astrid's husband. And those people, your family, your friends, they stare at me with such judgment. They're all thinking, ah, yeah, she could have married a prince, a president. Why did she marry this low-class abang from Toa Payoh?"
"You're imagining things, Michael. Everyone in my family adores you," Astrid protested.
"That's bullshit, and you know it.
Your father treats his fucking golf caddy better than me. I know my parents don't speak Queen's English. I didn't grow up in a big mansion in Bukit Timah, and I didn't attend ACS, American cocksuckers, as we used to call it. But I'm not some loser, Astrid. Of course you're not. Do you know how it feels to be treated like I'm the bloody tech support guy all the time? Do you know how it feels when I have to visit your relatives every Chinese New Year in their incredible houses, and then you have to come with me to my family's tiny flats in Tampines or Yishun? I've never minded, Michael. I like your family. But your parents don't. Think about it. In the 5 years we've been married, my mother and father haven't once, not even once, been invited to dinner at your parents' house. Astrid went pale. It was true. How could she not have realized it? How had her family been so thoughtless? Face it, Astrid. Your parents will never respect my family the same way they respect your brother's wives' families. We're not mighty tans or cars or keys. We're tios. You can't really blame your parents. They were born that way. It's just not in their DNA to associate with anyone who isn't from their class, anyone who isn't born rich or royal. But you're on your way to doing just that, Michael. Look at how well your company is doing, Astrid said encouragingly. My company, ha! You want to know something, Astrid? Last December, when the company finally broke even and we did our first profit sharing, I got a bonus check for 238,000. For 1 minute, one whole minute, I was so happy. It was the most money I had ever made. But then it hit me. I realized that no matter how long I work, no matter how hard I sweat my ass off all day long, I will never make as much money in my whole life as you make in 1 month alone. That's not true, Michael. That's just not true, Astrid cried. Don't patronize me, Michael shouted angrily. I know what your income is. I know how much those Paris dresses cost you. Do you know how it feels to realize that my pathetic $200,000 bonus can't even pay for one of your dresses? Or that I'll never be able to give you the type of house you grew up in? I'm happy where we live, Michael. Have I ever complained? I know about all your properties, Astrid, all of them. Who told you about them? Astrid asked in shock. Your brothers did. My brothers? Yes, your dear brothers. I never told you what happened when we got engaged. Your brothers called me one day and invited me to lunch, and they all showed up. Henry, Alex, and even Peter came down from KL. They invited me to the snotty club on Shenton Way that they all belonged to, took me into one of the private dining rooms, and sat me down. Then they showed me one of your financial reports, just one. They said, we want you to have a glimpse of Astrid's financial picture so you have an idea of what she netted last year. And then Henry said to me, and I'll never forget his words, everything Astrid has is safeguarded by the best team of lawyers in the world. No one outside the Leong family will ever benefit from or come to control her money. Not if she divorces, not even if she dies. Just thought you should know, old chap. Astrid was horrified. I can't believe it. Why didn't you tell me? What good would that do? Michael said bitterly. Don't you see? From day one, your family didn't trust me. You don't ever have to spend a single minute with my family again, I promise. I'm going to talk to my brothers. I'm going to give them hell. And no one will ever ask you to recover their hard drives or reprogram their wine fridges again, I promise. Just please, don't leave me, she pleaded, the tears flooding down her cheeks. Astrid, you are talking nonsense. I would never want to deprive you of your family. Your whole life revolves around them. What would you do if you weren't at Wednesday mahjong with your great-aunt Rosemary, Friday night dinner at your ama's, or Palau Club movie night with your dad? I can give it up. I can give all of that up. Astrid cried, burying her head in his lap and clinging to him tightly. I wouldn't want you to. You'll be happier without me in the long run. I'm just holding you back.
But what about Cassian? How can you just abandon our son like this?
I'm not abandoning him. I will still spend as much time with him as you let me.
Don't you see? If I was ever going to leave, this is the perfect time, before Cassian is old enough to be affected by it. I will never stop being a good father to him. But I can't stay married to you. I just don't want to live in your world anymore. There's no way I can measure up to your family, and I don't want to keep resenting you for who you are. I made a terrible mistake, Astrid. Please, please, just let me go, he said, his voice getting choked up. Astrid looked up at Michael, realizing it was the first time she had ever seen him cry.
Chapter 15. Villadoro, Singapore. Paiklin knocked softly on the door. Come in, Rachel said. Paiklin entered the bedroom gingerly, holding a gold tray with a covered earthenware bowl.
A cook made some peidanzuk for you.
Please thank her for me, Rachel said disinterestedly.
You can stay in here as long as you want, Rachel, but you need to eat. This century egg porridge will give you strength,
Paiklin said, staring at Rachel's gaunt face and the dark circles under her eyes, puffy from all the crying. I know I look like hell, Paiklin.
Nothing a good facial won't fix. Why don't you let me whisk you away to a spa? I know a great place in Sentosa that has...
Thank you, but I just don't think I'm ready yet. Maybe tomorrow?
Okay, tomorrow,
Paiklin chirped. Rachel had been saying the same thing all week, but she had not left the bedroom once. When Paiklin left the room, Rachel took the tray and placed it against the wall next to the door. She hadn't had an appetite for days, not since the night she had fled from Cameron Highlands. After fainting in the drawing room in front of Nick's mother and grandmother, she had been quickly revived by the expert ministrations of Shang Suyi's Thai ladies' maids. As she regained consciousness, she found a cold towel being dabbed on her forehead by one maid, while the other was performing reflexology on her foot.
No, no, please stop, Rachel said, trying to get up.
You mustn't get up so quickly, she heard Nick's mother say. The girl has such a weak constitution, she heard Nick's grandmother mutter from across the room.
Nick's worried face appeared over her.
Please, Nick, get me out of here, she pleaded weakly.
She had never wanted to leave someplace more desperately in her life. Nick scooped her into his arms and carried her toward the door.
You can't leave now, Nikki. It's too dark to drive down the mountain, La, Eleanor called after them.
You should have thought of that before you decided to play God with Rachel's life, Nick said through clenched teeth.
As they drove down the winding road away from the lodge, Rachel said, You don't have to drive down the mountain tonight. Just drop me off at that town we passed through.
We can go anywhere you want to, Rachel. Why don't we get off this mountain and spend the night in KL? We can get there by 10.
No, Nick, I don't want to drive anymore. I need some time on my own. Just drop me off in town. Nick was silent for a moment, thinking carefully before he responded.
What are you going to do?
I want to check into a motel and go to sleep, that's all. I just want to be away from everyone.
I'm not sure you should be alone right now.
For God's sake, Nick, I'm not some basket case. I'm not going to slip my wrist or take a million seconals. I just need some time to think. Rachel answered sharply.
Let me be with you. I really need to be alone, Nick.
Her eyes seemed glazed over. Nick knew that she was in a deep state of shock. He was shocked himself, so he could scarcely imagine what she was going through. At the same time, he was racked with guilt, feeling responsible for the damage that had been done. It was his fault again. Intent on finding Rachel a tranquil haven, he had inadvertently led her right into a viper's nest. He even pulled her hand in to be bitten. His fucking mother. Maybe one night alone would do her no harm.
There's a little inn down in the lower valley called Lake House. Why don't I drive you there and check you into a room?
That's fine, she responded numbly. They drove in silence for the next half hour, Nick never taking his eyes off the treacherous curves, while Rachel stared at the rush of blackness out her window. They pulled up to the lake house shortly after 8. It was a charming, thatched roof house that looked like it had been transported straight out of the Cotswolds, but Rachel was too numb to notice any of it. after Nick had checked her into a plushly decorated bedroom, lit the logs in the stone fireplace, and kissed her goodbye, promising to return first thing in the morning, Rachel left the room and headed straight to the reception desk.
"Can you please stop payment on that credit card?" she said to the night clerk. "I won't be needing the room, but I will be needing a taxi."
3 days after arriving at Paiklin's, Rachel crouched on the floor in the far corner of the bedroom and summoned the courage to call her mother in Cupertino.
"Ayah, so many days I haven't heard from you. You must be having such a good time,"
Carrie Chu said cheerily.
"Like hell I am."
"Why? What happened? Did you and Nick fight?" Carrie asked, worried by her daughter's strange tone.
"I just need to know one thing, Mom. Is my father still alive?"
There was a fraction of a pause on the other end of the line.
"What are you talking about, daughter? Your father died when you were a baby. You know that."
Rachel dug her nails into the plush carpeting.
"I'm going to ask you one more time. Is my father alive?"
"I don't understand. What have you heard?"
"Yes or no, Mom. Don't waste my fucking time," she spat out.
Carrie gasped at the force of Rachel's anger. It sounded like she was in the next room.
"Daughter, you need to calm down. Who is Zhu Fang Min?"
"There." She had said it. There was a long pause before her mother said nervously,
"Daughter, you need to let me explain."
She could feel her heart pounding in her temples. "So it's true. He is alive."
"Yes, but..."
"So everything you've told me my entire life has been a lie. A big fucking lie." Rachel held the phone away from her face and screamed into it, her hands shaking with rage.
"No, Rachel, I'm going to hang up now, Mom."
"No, no, don't hang up," Carrie pleaded. "You're a liar, a kidnapper. You deprived me from knowing my father, my real family."
"How could you, Mom? You don't know what a hateful man he was. You don't understand what I went through."
"That's not the point, Mom. You lied to me about the most important thing in my life." Rachel shuddered as she broke down in sobs.
"No, no, you don't understand.
Maybe if you hadn't kidnapped me, he wouldn't have done all the horrible things he did. Maybe he wouldn't be in jail now." She looked down at her hand and realized she was pulling out tufts of the carpet.
"No, daughter, I had to save you from him, from his family. I don't know what to believe anymore, Mom. Who can I trust now? My name isn't even real. What's my real name? I changed your name to protect you. I don't know who the fuck I am anymore. You're my daughter, my precious daughter."
Carrie cried, feeling utterly helpless, standing in her kitchen in California while her daughter's heart was breaking somewhere in Singapore.
"I need to go now, Mom."
She hung up the phone and crawled onto the bed. She lay on her back, letting her head hang off the side. Maybe the rush of blood would stop the pounding, would end the pain. The Goh family was just sitting down to some po pia when Rachel entered the dining room.
"There she is," Wai Moon called out jovially. "I told you Jane Eyre would come down sooner or later."
Paik Lin made a face at her father, while her brother, Paik Wing, said,
"Jane Eyre was the nanny, Papa, not the woman who..."
"Hola, hola, smart Alec, you get my point," Wai Moon said dismissively.
"Rachel, if you don't eat something, you are going to disappear," Nina chided. "Will you have one popia?"
Rachel glanced at the lazy Susan, groaning with dozens of little plates of food that seemed completely random, and wondered what they were having.
"Sure, Auntie Nina. I'm absolutely starving."
"That's what I like to hear," Nina said. "Come, come, let me make you one."
She placed a thin wheat flour crepe on a gold-rimmed plate and scooped a big serving of meat and vegetable filling onto the middle. Next, she slathered some sweet hoisin sauce on one side of the crepe and reached for the little dishes, scattering plump prawns, crab meat, fried omelet, shallot, cilantro, minced garlic, chili sauce, and ground peanuts over the filling. She finished this off with another generous drizzle of sweet hoisin and deftly folded the crepe into what looked like an enormous, bulging burrito.
"Nah, ziak,"
Paik Lin's mother commanded. Rachel began inhaling her po pia ravenously, barely tasting the jicama and Chinese sausage in the filling. It had been a week since she had eaten much of anything.
See, look at her smile. There is nothing in the world that good food cannot fix, Wai Moon said, helping himself to another crepe. Pek Lin got up from her seat and gave Rachel a big hug from behind.
It's good to have you back, she said, her eyes getting moist.
Thank you. In fact, I really need to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for letting me camp out here for so long, Rachel added.
Yeah, I'm just so happy you're eating again, Nina grinned. Now, time for mango ice cream sundaes. Ice cream, the Go granddaughter screamed in delight. You've been through a lot, Rachel Chu. I'm glad we are able to help, Wai Moon nodded. You are welcome to stay as long as you like.
No, I've overstayed my welcome. Rachel smiled sheepishly, wondering how she could have let herself hole up in their guest room for so many days.
Have you thought about what you're going to do?
Pek Lin asked. Yeah. I'm going to head back to the States. But first, she paused, taking a deep breath. I think I need to go to China. I've decided that, for better or for worse, I want to meet my father. The whole table went silent for a moment.
What's the rush? Pek Lin asked gently.
I'm already on this side of the globe. Why not meet him now? Rachel said, trying to make it sound like it was no big deal.
Are you going to go with Nick?
Wai Moon asked. Rachel's face darkened. No, he's the last person I want to go to China with.
You are going to tell him, though?
Pek Lin inquired delicately. I might. I haven't really decided yet. I just don't want a reenactment of Apocalypse Now. I'll be in the middle of meeting my father for the first time, and next thing you know, one of Nick's relatives will land in the prison yard in a chopper. I'll be glad if I never have to see another private jet, yacht, or fancy car for the rest of my life, Rachel vehemently declared.
Okay, Papa, cancel the NetJets membership, Pek Wing wisecracked.
Everyone at the table laughed.
Nick's been calling every day, you know,
Pek Lin said. I'm sure he has.
It's been pretty pathetic, PT reported. It was 4 times a day when you first got here, but he tapered off to once a day. He drove up here twice, hoping we might let him come in, but the guards told him he had to move along.
Rachel's heart sank. She could imagine how Nick was feeling, but at the same time, she didn't know how to face him. He had suddenly become a reminder of everything that had gone wrong in her life.
You should see him, Wai Moon said gently.
I disagree, Papa,
Pek Wing's wife, Cheryl, piped in.
If I were Rachel, I would never want to see Nick or anyone in that evil family again. Who do those people think they are, trying to ruin people's lives?
A la Mark, why make the poor boy suffer? It's not his fault that his mother is a Chao Chi Bai,
Nina exclaimed. The whole table exploded in laughter except for Cheryl, who made a face as she covered her daughter's ears.
Hiya, Cheryl, they're too young to know what it means, Nina assured her daughter-in-law.
What does that mean? Rachel asked.
Rotten cunt, PT whispered with relish.
No, smelly rotten cunt,
Wai Moon corrected. Everyone roared again, Rachel included. Recovering herself, Rachel sighed. I guess I ought to see him. 2 hours later, Rachel and Nick were seated at an umbrella-shaded table by the swimming pool of Villa Doro, the sound of trickling gilded fountains punctuating the silence. Rachel gazed at the water ripples reflecting off the golden blue mosaic tiles. She couldn't bring herself to look at Nick. Strangely, what had been the most beautiful face in the world to her had become too painful to look at. She found herself suddenly mute, not quite knowing how to begin. Nick swallowed nervously.
I don't even know how to begin to ask for your forgiveness.
There's nothing to forgive. You weren't responsible for this.
But I am. I've had a lot of time to think about it. I put you in one horrendous situation after another. I'm so sorry, Rachel. I've been recklessly ignorant about my own family. I had no idea how crazy my mum would get. And I always thought my grandmother wanted me to be happy.
Rachel stared at the sweaty glass of iced tea in front of her, not saying anything.
I'm so relieved to see that you're okay. I've been so worried, Nick said.
I've been well taken care of by the Goes, Rachel said simply.
Yes, I met Pek Lin's parents earlier. They're lovely. Nina Go demanded that I come to dinner. Not tonight, of course, but...
Rachel gave the barest hint of a smile. The woman is a feeder, and you look like you've lost some weight. Actually, he looked terrible. She had never seen him like this.
He looked like he had slept in his clothes and his hair had lost its floppy sheen.
I haven't been eating much.
Your old cook at Tyersall Park hasn't been preparing all your favorite dishes? Rachel said a little sarcastically. She knew her pent-up anger was misdirected at Nick, but in the moment, she couldn't help herself. She realized he was as much a victim of circumstances as she was, but she wasn't able to look past her own pain just yet.
Actually, I'm not staying at Tyersall Park, Nick said.
Oh?
I haven't wanted to see anyone since that night in Cameron Highlands, Rachel.
Are you back at the Kingsford Hotel?
Collins let me crash at his house in Sentosa Cove while he's away on his honeymoon. He and Araminta have been very worried about you too, you know.
How nice of them, she said flatly, staring out across the pool at the replica of Venus de Milo. An armless statue of a beautiful maiden fought over by collectors for centuries, even though its origins have never been verified. Maybe someone should chop off her arms, too. Maybe she would feel better. Nick reached out and placed his hand over Rachel's.
Let's go back to New York. Let's go home.
I've been thinking. I need to go to China. I want to meet my father. Nick paused.
Are you sure you're ready for that?
Is anyone ever ready to meet the father they never knew, who's in a prison? Nick sighed.
Well, when do we leave?
Actually, Picklin is coming with me.
Oh,
Nick said, a little taken aback.
Can I come?
I'd like to be there for you. No, Nick. This is something I need to do on my own. It's already enough that Picklin insisted on coming. But her father has friends in China who are helping with the red tape, so I couldn't say no. I'll be in and out within a couple of days, and then I'll be ready to head back to New York.
Well, just let me know when you want to change the return date on our plane tickets. I'm ready to go home any time, Rachel.
Rachel inhaled deeply, bracing herself for what she was about to say. Nick, I need to go back to New York. On my own.
On your own?
Nick said in surprise.
Yes.
I don't need you to cut short your summer vacation and fly back with me.
No, no, I'm as sick of this place as you are. I want to go home with you, Nick insisted.
That's the thing, Nick. I don't think I can deal with that right now. Nick looked at her sadly. She was clearly still in a world of pain.
And when I'm back in New York, she continued, her voice getting shaky, I don't think we should see each other anymore.
What? What do you mean? Nick said in alarm.
I mean exactly that.
I'll get my things out of your apartment as soon as I get back. And then when you return...
Rachel, you're crazy, Nick said, leaping out of his chair and crouching down beside her. Why are you saying all this? I love you. I want to marry you.
I love you too, Rachel cried.
But don't you see? It's never going to work.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I don't give a damn what my family thinks. I want to be with you, Rachel.
Rachel shook her head slowly. It's not just your family, Nick. It's your friends, your childhood friends. It's everyone on this island.
That's not true, Rachel. My best friends think the world of you. Colin, Mehmet, Alistair, and there are so many friends of mine you haven't even had the chance to meet. But that's all beside the point. We live in New York now. Our friends are there, our life is there, and it's been great. It will continue to be great once we've left all this insanity behind.
It's not that simple, Nick. You probably didn't notice it yourself, but you said, we live in New York now. But you won't always be living in New York. You'll be returning here someday, probably within the next few years. Don't kid yourself. Your whole family is here. Your legacy is here.
Oh, fuck all that. You know I couldn't care less about that bullshit.
That's what you say now, but don't you see how things might change in time? Don't you think you might start to resent me in years to come?
I could never resent you, Rachel. You're the most important person in my life. You have no idea. I've barely slept, barely eaten. The past 7 days have been absolute hell without you.
Rachel sighed, clamping her eyes shut for a moment. I know you've been in pain. I don't want to hurt you. But I think it's really for the best.
To break up? You're not making any sense, Rachel. I know how much you're hurting right now, but breaking up won't make it hurt any less.
Let me help you, Rachel. Let me take care of you, Nick pleaded fervently, hair getting into his eyes. What if we have children? Our children will never be accepted by your family. Who cares? We'll have our own family, our own lives. None of this is significant. It's significant to me. I've been thinking about it endlessly, Nick. You know, at first I was so shocked to learn about my past. I was devastated by my mother's lies. To realize that even my name wasn't real. I felt like my whole identity had been robbed from me. But then I realized, none of it really matters. What is a name anyway? We Chinese are so obsessed with family names. I'm proud of my own name. I'm proud of the person I've become.
I am too, Nick said.
So you'll have to understand that, as much as I love you, Nick, I don't want to be your wife. I never want to be part of a family like yours. I can't marry into a clan that thinks it's too good to have me. And I don't want my children to ever be connected to such people. I want them to grow up in a loving, nurturing home, surrounded by grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins who consider them equals. Because that's ultimately what I have, Nick. You've seen it yourself when you came home with me last Thanksgiving. You see what it's like with my cousins. We're competitive, we tease each other mercilessly, but at the end of the day, we support each other. That's what I want for my kids. I want them to love their family, but to feel a deeper sense of pride in who they are as individuals, Nick. Not in how much money they have, what their last name is, or how many generations they go back to whatever dynasty. I'm sorry, but I've had enough. I've had enough of being around all these crazy rich Asians. All these people whose lives revolve around making money, spending money, flaunting money, comparing money, hiding money, controlling others with money, and ruining their lives over money. And if I marry you, there will be no escaping it, even if we live on the other side of the world. Rachel's eyes were brimming with tears, and as much as Nick wanted to insist she was wrong, he knew nothing he could say now would convince her otherwise. In any part of the world, whether New York, Paris, or Shanghai, she was lost to him.
Chapter 16. Sentosa Cove, Singapore.
It must have been a bird or something, Nick thought, waking up to a sound. There was a blue jay that liked to tap its beak against the sliding glass wall downstairs by the reflecting pool every morning. How long had he been sleeping? It was 7:45, so this meant he'd knocked off at least 4.5 hours. Not bad, considering that he hadn't been able to sleep more than 3 hours a night since Rachel had broken up with him a week ago. The bed was bathed in a pool of light coming from the retractable glass roof, and now it was far too bright for him to go back to sleep. How did Colin manage to get any sleep in this place? There was something so impractical about living in a house that consisted mainly of reflecting pools and glass walls. Nick turned over, facing the Venetian stucco wall with the large Hiroshi Sugimoto photograph. It was a black-and-white image from his cinema series, the interior of an old theater somewhere in Ohio. Sugimoto had left the camera shutter open for the duration of the film, so that the large screen became a glowing, rectangular portal of light. To Nick, it seemed like a portal to a parallel universe, and he wished he could just slip into all that whiteness and disappear. Maybe go back in time. To April or May. He should have known better. He should never have invited Rachel to come here without first giving her a crash course in how to deal with his family. Rich, entitled, delusional Chinese families, 101. Could he really be part of this family? The older he got and the more years he spent abroad, the more he felt like a stranger in their midst. Now that he was in his 30s, the expectations kept growing and the rules kept changing. He didn't know how to keep up with this place anymore, and yet he loved being back home. He loved the long, rainy afternoons at his grandmother's house during monsoon season, going to Chinatown to hunt for old-fashioned Gui Tutu dessert treats, the long walks around McRitchie Reservoir at dusk with his father. There was the sound again. This time it didn't sound like the blue jay. He had fallen asleep without arming the security system, and now someone was definitely in the house. He threw on a pair of shorts and tiptoed out of the bedroom. The guest bedroom was accessed through a glass skywalk that stretched across the back section of the house, and looking down, he could see the flicker of a reflection as it moved across the polished Brazilian oak floors.
Was the house being burglarized? Sentosa Cove was so isolated, and anyone reading the gossip rags knew Colin Koo and Araminta Lee were away on their fabulous honeymoon yachting around the Dalmatian coast. Nick hunted around for a weapon. The only thing he could find was a carved didgeridoo propped against the wall of the guest bathroom. Would someone actually play the didgeridoo while sitting on the loo? He crept down the floating titanium stairs and walked slowly toward the galley kitchen, raising the didgeridoo to strike just as Colin appeared from around the corner. Christ! Nick swore in surprise, putting down his weapon. Colin seemed unruffled by the sight of Nick in nothing more than a pair of soccer shorts, wielding a rainbow-colored didgeridoo.
I don't think that makes a good weapon, Nick, he said. Should have gone for the antique samurai sword in my bedroom. I thought someone was breaking in. There are no break-ins around here. This neighborhood is way too secure, and thieves can't be bothered to drive out here just to steal customized kitchen appliances.
What are you doing back from your honeymoon so early? Nick asked, scratching his head.
Well, I heard disturbing rumors that my best friend was suicidal and wasting away in my house.
Wasting away, but not suicidal, Nick groaned.
Seriously, Nikki, you have a lot of people worried about you.
Oh, like who? And don't say my mother.
Sophie's been worried. Araminta. Even Mandy. She called me in Havar. I think she feels really bad about how she acted.
Well, the damage has been done, Nick said gruffly.
Listen, why don't I make you a quick breakfast? You look like you haven't eaten in years.
That'll be great.
Watch as the Iron Chef attempts to fry up some ho bao dan.
Nick perched on a bar stool at the island in the kitchen, wolfing down his breakfast. He held up a fork of eggs.
Almost as good as Ah Ching's. Pure luck. My bao dan usually end up as scrambled eggs.
Well, it's the best thing I've eaten all week. Actually, it's the only thing I've eaten.
I've just been parked on your sofa binging on beer and episodes of Mad Men. By the way, you're out of Red Stripe.
This is the first time you've ever really been depressed, isn't it?
Finally, the heartbreaker discovers how it feels to get his heart broken.
I don't actually hold the trademark on that name. Alistair's the true heartbreaker.
Wait a minute. You haven't heard? Kitty Pong dumped him.
Now that's a shocker, Nick remarked dryly.
No, you don't know the whole story. At the tea ceremony the day after the wedding, Araminta and I were in the middle of pouring tea for Mrs. Li Yongchen when we all heard this strange noise coming from somewhere. It sounded like a rattling crossed with some kind of farm animal giving birth. No one could figure out what it was. We thought maybe a bat was stuck somewhere in the house. So a few of us started looking around discreetly, and you know how my grandfather's colonial house on Belmont Road is. There are all these huge built-in closets everywhere. Well, little Rupert Koo opens the door under the grand staircase and out tumble Kitty and Bernard Tai, right in front of all the guests.
No, Nick exclaimed. And that's not the worst of it.
Bernard was bent over spread eagle with his pants around his ankles, and Kitty still had two fingers up his bum when the door popped open.
Nick broke out into hysterical fits, slapping the travertine counter repeatedly as tears ran down his cheeks.
You should have seen the look on Mrs. Li Yongchen's face. I thought I was going to have to perform CPR.
Colin sniggered.
Thanks for the laugh.
I needed that. Nick sighed, trying to catch his breath.
I feel bad for Alistair.
Oh, he'll get over it. I'm more worried about you.
Seriously, what are you going to do about Rachel? We need to get you cleaned up and back on your white horse. I think Rachel could use your help now more than ever.
I know that, but she's adamant about wanting me out of her life. She made it clear she never wanted to see me again, and those goes have done a damn good job of enforcing that.
She's still in shock, Nikki. With all that's happened to her, how could she possibly know what she wants?
I know her, Colin. When her mind is made up, there's no going back. She's not a sentimentalist. She's very pragmatic, and she's so stubborn. She's decided that because of the way my family is, being together will never work.
Can you blame her after what they've done?
Isn't it ironic? Everyone thinks she's some kind of gold digger, when she's the complete opposite. She broke up with me because of my money.
I told you I liked her from the day we met. She's the real deal, isn't she? Colin observed.
Nick gazed out the window at the view across the bay. In the morning haze, the Singapore skyline almost resembled Manhattan's.
I love the life we had together in New York, he said wistfully. I loved getting up early on Sunday mornings and going to Murray's to pick up bagel sandwiches with her. I loved spending hours wandering around the West Village, going to Washington Square Park to check out the dogs playing in the dog run. But I fucked it all up. I'm the reason her life has become a total mess. You're not the reason, Nikki. Colin, I ruined her life. Because of me, she no longer has a relationship with her mother, and they were like best friends. Because of me, she found out that her father is a convict, that everything she believed about herself has been a lie. None of this would have happened if I hadn't brought her here. As much as I want to believe there's a part of her that still loves me, we're trapped in an impossible situation. Nick sighed. A sudden rapping noise, consistent as Morse code, echoed through the kitchen. What's that? Colin asked, looking around. I sure hope it's not Kitty and Bernard again. No, that's the Blue Jay, Nick said, getting up from the bar stool and heading toward the living room. What Blue Jay? Don't you know? There's this Blue Jay that visits every morning without fail, and for about 10 minutes it will keep flying into the glass wall and pecking at it. I guess I'm never up this early. Colin entered the living room and stared out the window, enthralled by the cobalt blue bird darting through the air, its tiny black beak hitting against the glass pane for a moment before swooping away, only to return seconds later, like a tiny pendulum swinging against the glass. I keep wondering if he's just sharpening his beak or whether he's really trying to come in, Nick said. Have you thought of opening the glass wall and seeing if he will fly in? Colin suggested. No, Nick said, looking at his friend as if it was the most brilliant thing he had ever heard. Colin picked up the house remote control and pressed a button. The glass panels began to open effortlessly. The Blue Jay zipped into the living room at top speed, heading straight for the massive painting of brightly colored dots against the far wall, where it began pecking mercilessly at one of the bright yellow dots. Oh my God, the Damien Hirst! It's been attracted to those bright dots all along, Nick cried in amazement. Are you sure it's not the world's tiniest art critic? Colin quipped. Look at the way it's attacking the painting. Nick rushed up to the painting, waving his arms to shoo the bird off. Colin sprawled onto his George Nakashima bench. Well, Nikki, I hate to point out the obvious, but here's this tiny bird that's been trying to get through a huge bulletproof glass wall. A totally impossible situation. You tell me it's been here every day, pecking away persistently for 10 minutes. Well, today, the glass wall came down. So you're saying I should free the bird? I should just let Rachel go? Colin gave Nick an exasperated look. No, you idiot. If you love Rachel as much as you say you do, then you need to be that Blue Jay for her. Okay, so what would the Blue Jay do? Nick asked. He would never give up trying. He would take an impossible situation and make everything possible. Chapter 17 Repulse Bay, Hong Kong. The Corsair speedboat collected Astrid from the jetty on the crescent-shaped beach and sped out into the deep emerald waters of Repulse Bay. Rounding the cove, Astrid caught her first glimpse of a majestic 3-masted Chinese junk moored in Shenghamwan, with Charlie standing on its prow waving at her. How magnificent, Astrid said as the speedboat pulled alongside the junk. I thought you could do with a little pick-me-up, Charlie said bashfully, as he helped her climb on deck. He had watched anxiously from the sidelines for the past couple of weeks as Astrid progressed through several stages of grief, going from shock to rage to despair while holed up at his duplex. When it seemed like she had come to a place of acceptance, he invited her for an afternoon sail, thinking that the fresh air would do her some good. Astrid found her footing and smoothed out her navy capri pants. Should I take off my shoes? No. If you were wearing your usual stilettos, that would be one thing, but you're fine in those flats, Charlie assured her. Well, I wouldn't want to ruin any of this amazing woodwork. Astrid admired the gleaming golden teak surfaces around her. How long have you had this junk? Technically, it belongs to the company, since we're supposed to use it to impress clients, but I've been working on restoring it for the past 3 years. Weekend project, you know. How old is it? She is from the 18th century, a pirate junk that smuggled opium in and out of all the tiny surrounding islands of southern Canton, which is precisely the course I've charted for today, Charlie said as he gave the order to set sail. The massive tarpaulin sails were unfurled, turning from burnt sienna to a bright crimson in the sunlight as the vessel lurched into motion.
There's a family legend that my great-great-grandfather dealt in opium, you know.
In a very big way. That's how part of the family fortune was really made, Astrid said, turning her face into the breeze as the junk began to glide swiftly along.
Really? Which side of the family?
Charlie raised an eyebrow.
I shouldn't say. We're not allowed to talk about it, so I'm pretty sure it's true. My great-grandmother was apparently completely addicted and spent all her time horizontal in her private opium den.
The daughter of the opium king became an addict? That's not a good business strategy.
Karma, I guess. At some point, we all have to pay the price for our excesses, don't we?
Astrid said ruefully. Charlie knew where Astrid was going with this.
Don't go beating yourself up again. I've said it 100 times now. There was nothing you could have done to prevent Michael from doing what he wanted to do.
Sure there was. I've been driving myself crazy thinking back on all the things I could have done differently. I could have refused when my lawyers insisted that he sign that prenup. I could have stopped going to Paris 2x a year and filling up our spare bedroom with couture dresses. I could have given him less expensive presents. That Vacheron for his 30th birthday was a huge mistake.
You are only being yourself. And to anyone but Michael, it would have been perfectly okay. He should have known what he was getting himself into when he married you. Give yourself a little more credit, Astrid. You might have extravagant tastes, but that's never stopped you from being a good person.
I don't know how you can say all this about me, when I treated you so horribly, Charlie.
I never held a grudge against you. You know that. It was your parents I was mad at.
Astrid stared up at the blue sky. A lone seagull seemed to be flying in tandem with the ship, flapping its wings forcefully to keep up with it.
Well, now my parents will surely regret that I didn't marry you, once they find out that their precious daughter has been dumped by Michael Teo. Imagine, my parents were once so aghast at the prospect of you becoming their son-in-law. They stuck their noses up at your father's brand new fortune made from computers, and now your family is one of the most celebrated in Asia. Now the Leongs are going to have to face the shame of having a divorcee in the family.
There's nothing shameful about it. Divorce is getting so common these days.
But not in our kind of families, Charlie, you know that. Look at your own situation. Your wife won't give you a divorce. Your mother won't even hear of it. Think of what it's going to be like in my family when they find out the truth. They won't know what hit them.
2 deckhands approached with a wine bucket and a gigantic platter overflowing with fresh longans and lychees. Charlie popped open the bottle of Chateau de Chem and poured Astrid a glass.
Michael loved sauternes. It was one of the few things we both loved,
Astrid said wistfully as she took a sip from her wine glass.
Of course, I learned to appreciate soccer, and he learned to appreciate 4-ply toilet paper.
But were you really that happy, Astrid? Charlie asked. I mean, it seems like you sacrificed so much more than he did. I still can't imagine you living in that little flat, smuggling your shopping into the spare bedroom like an addict.
I was happy, Charlie. And more important, Cassian was happy. Now he's going to have to grow up a child of divorce, ping-ponging between 2 households. I failed my son.
You haven't failed him, Charlie scolded. The way I see it, Michael was the one who abandoned ship. He just couldn't take the heat. As much of a coward as I think he is, I can also empathize a bit. Your family is pretty intimidating. They sure gave me a run for my money, and they won in the end, didn't they?
Well, you weren't the one who gave in. You stood up to my family and never let them get to you.
I was the one who caved, Astrid said, expertly peeling a longan and popping the pearly fruit into her mouth.
Still, it's far easier for a beautiful woman from an ordinary background to marry into a family like yours than for a man who doesn't come from any wealth or lineage. And Michael had the added disadvantage of being good-looking. The men in your family were probably jealous of him.
Astrid laughed. Well, I thought he was up for the challenge. When I first met Michael, he didn't seem to care one bit about my money or my family. But in the end, I was wrong. He did care. He cared too much.
Astrid's voice cracked,
and Charlie stretched out his arms to comfort her. Tears streamed down her face quietly, turning quickly into racking sobs as she leaned into his shoulder. I'm sorry, she kept saying, embarrassed by her uncontrolled display. I don't know why, but I just can't stop crying.
Astrid, it's me. You don't have to keep your emotions in check around me. You've thrown vases and goldfish bowls at me, remember?
Charlie said, trying to lighten the mood. Astrid smiled fleetingly as the tears continued to flow. Charlie felt helpless and at the same time frustrated by the absurdity of the situation. His smoking-hot ex-fiancée was on a romantic Chinese junk with him, literally crying on his shoulder about another man. This was just his damn luck.
You really love him, don't you? Charlie said softly.
I do. Of course I do, Astrid sobbed. For a few hours, they sat quietly side by side, soaking in the sun and the salty spray as the junk floated along the calm waters of the South China Sea. They sailed past Lantau Island, Charlie bowing respectfully to the giant Buddha at its peak, and skirted past tiny picturesque islands like Aizu and Sanmen, with their rugged outcroppings and hidden inlets. All the while, Charlie's mind kept churning nonstop. He had coerced Astrid into coming on this afternoon sail because he wanted to make a confession. He wanted to tell her that he had never stopped loving her, not for one moment, and that his marriage 1 year after their breakup had been nothing but a mindless rebound. He had never truly loved Isabel, and their marriage was doomed from the start because of it. There were so many things Charlie wanted her to know, but he knew it was too late to tell them. At least she had loved him once. At least he had 4 good years with the girl he had loved since he was 15, since the night he had watched her sing Pass It on the beach during a church youth group outing. His family had been Taoists, but his mother had forced all of them to attend First Methodist so they could mix with a ritzier crowd. He could still remember the way the flickering bonfire made her long wavy hair shimmer in the most exquisite reds and golds, how her entire being glowed like Botticelli's Venus as she so sweetly sang.
It only takes a spark to get the fire going, and soon all those around can warm up in its glowing. That's how it is with God's love. Once you've experienced it, you want to sing. It's fresh like spring. You want to pass it on.
Can I make a suggestion, Astrid? Charlie said as the junk made its way back to Repulse Bay to drop her off.
What? Astrid asked sleepily.
When you get home tomorrow, do nothing. Just go back to your normal life. Don't make any announcements, and don't grant Michael a quick divorce.
Why not?
I have a feeling Michael could have a change of heart.
What makes you think that will happen?
Well, I'm a guy, and I know how guys think.
At this point, Michael's played all his cards. He's gotten a huge load off his chest. There's something really cathartic about that, about owning up to your truth. Now, if you let him have some time to himself, I think you'll find that he might be receptive to a reconciliation a few months down the line. Astrid was dubious.
Really? But he was so adamant about wanting a divorce. Think about it. Michael's deluded himself into thinking he's been trapped in an impossible marriage for the past 5 years. But a funny thing happens when men truly get a taste of freedom, especially when they're accustomed to married life. They begin to crave that domestic bliss again. They want to recreate it.
Look, he told you the sex was still great. He told you he didn't blame you, aside from blowing too much money on clothes. My instinct tells me that if you just let him be, he will come back.
Well, it's worth a try, isn't it? Astrid said hopefully.
It is.
But you have to promise me 2 things. First, you need to live your life the way you want to, instead of how you think Michael would want you to. Move into one of your favorite houses. Dress however it pleases you. I really feel that what ate into Michael was the way you spent all your time tiptoeing around him, trying to be someone you weren't. You're overcompensating for him, only increased his feelings of inadequacy.
Okay, Astrid said, trying to soak it all in. Second, promise me you won't grant him a divorce for at least